Okay, today we're starting Masechet Sanhedrin. We were rushed the first two shiurim this week, so I didn't read the Refuah Shleima for the week. I'll read them now. Refuah Shleima le David Avram ben Miriam, Orla Pnei bat Rachel Frida, Yael Miriam bat Chaya, Daphna Chaya bat Sari, Lana Mira bat Dina, Rezal bat Pesha, Rafael Aviv Rachamim ben Zipora, Yeshua Dan ben Naomi, Roni bat Sarah, Ahava Muna bat Chava, Micha bat Esther Miriam, Moshe ben Bluma, Yiloi Nishmat Moshe Chaim ben Huva. Okay, Sanhedrin is a great Masechet for many reasons. One of the reasons is it's very diverse, which it gets into all sorts of issues where often Masechetot are very, very focused on, obviously they all always get off on tangents, but they're much more focused on particular topics. Sanhedrin gets off on all sorts of diversions, mainly because in the later part it gets into all the different mitot and who gets mitah for what avera, and from there we get into a million different topics because each topic gets discussed, and it's kind of nice because we do one unit, we move on, we do another unit, we move on, as opposed to spending, let's say, 2 months on Dine Yerusha, for example. Okay, the other thing, if you want some further reading, Steinsaltz has a beautiful introduction to the Masechet, which you can find either in the Koren. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same, but if you Google Introduction to Sanhedrin, you'll find that one of the first things that come up is this introduction of Steinsaltz, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase, I'm going to summarize a little bit what he says, because I thought he gave a beautiful introduction to the Masechet. He talks about that you would think Sanhedrin, before we actually get into that, let me talk about the word Sanhedrin. The word Sanhedrin comes from the Greek. There's a word, synedrion, which means councils, and particularly councils run by judges or rulers, which makes sense in the context here. The Bartanura and others, probably in his path, say it's actually a notricon, you know, one of these abbreviated forms for sonei hadrat panim, those who hate giving favor to people, which basically shows no favoritism. So that, obviously the problems with this is sonei is sin nun aleph, Sanhedrin is samach nun, okay. Anyway, it's usually those kind of things come after. You know, it's most likely from the Greek, but from there, right? It's hard to say it's not from the Greek when their word is synedrion. Okay, Sanhedrin, we generally think of the court. So Steinsaltz starts out and he says, you might think this is a book about the court system, but actually what he claims is that it's a book about the Jewish state. And that the idea is, it's all about how the Jewish state should work. And he brings a pasuk from Yeshayahu, Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Kaf Bet, Ki Hashem Shoftenu, Hashem Mekokakenu, Hashem Malkenu, Hu Yoshienu. Okay, so if you focus on the first three phrases of that pasuk, God is our judge, God is our Mechokek, He makes the laws, and God is our ruler, our king. So what does that show? The three branches of government, right? Judicial, legislative, and executive. So he says that that's basically what this Masechet is about, the different branches of government. And what he says is the difference between this system of law rather than any other system of law is that there's a lot of God in our system of law, and that the purpose of the judge is not only, the purpose of Jewish law is not only to create an orderly society, but also to kind of create a godly community. And he points out, number one, that if you think about these three branches of government, so where do we see it? So he says, first of all, the legislative is all God. All comes from God, and it's the Torah, and that's our legislative. We don't really have a legislative active branch. What we have is the judicial, which is explaining the laws and interpreting them and updating them for whatever time it might be. And then we have the executive, which is the king or the nasi, which obviously in our day, I mean, the truth is in our day, we still have the judicial sort of, but even the judicial doesn't function the way it functioned then. We don't have a Sanhedrin, we don't have a court that everybody agrees with. And then the executive is the king or the nasi or some sort of ruler, and he's in charge of domestic and foreign policy, and he actually has very little interaction with the judicial branch. They don't really work together. There's only a few particular things which we'll get into, like, for example, going out to war. He can't make that decision on his own. He needs the Sanhedrin to sign off on that. So there's an interplay, but not such a great interplay between them. He says that what's described in this Masechet is not a utopian either time of the Mashiach or time of Malchut David and Malchut Shlomo. No, it actually describes in the time of the Mishnah what was going on. And it describes there they had the kings who were not Malchut David, it was the Cheshmonaim kings. and they had a Sanhedrin, but the Sanhedrin over time very much weakened based on, because the Romans took over. And once the Romans took over, it was limiting their power. And that's why he says this whole book is about a Jewish state, really, because it's a state when the Jews are in power. When the Jews aren't in power, then this whole system is not so relevant. And the Sanhedrin, as we know, it moved from Yerushalayim to Yavne and the Churban, but even before that, it was already, its power was weakening. And the last thing is about the, going back to the fact of the purpose being both an orderly society and being creating a godly community, the judges are seen kind of as representatives of God. And therefore, there's a few things that we'll see. Number one, we're going to see it today, that, and we see it in the Torah, that judges are called Elohim, which is really a name for God. But yet, often it's called Elohim, like V'Yishol Elohim, right, when you bring them to the Eved Ivri, for example. You bring him to the, it means to the court. It doesn't mean he goes before God. And then they also need smicha, which is really this idea that we're taking, you know, from the time of Moshe, when Moshe gave the power to the Shevim Zkenim. We're going to see the connection to the Shevim Zkenim, to the Sanhedrin being 70, which we'll see it's not really 70, or maybe it is, we'll see. And that there's this idea of the smicha is kind of getting a sort of godly power to rule. We'll talk about, you know, that when we get the famous sugya of Zakei Mamre about lo yasur l'chamin adavar sheyigidu l'chayaminu small, how far do we take that? Now, do we see them as messengers of God, but what if they make mistakes? Obviously, as soon as you put it in human hands, there's room for error. Do we follow them in case of error? Do we not? What do we do? We'll talk about that. Very interesting sugya. Okay, with that, let's get started. Starting with Daf Bet, if you notice, okay, the Mishnah, we're going to read all the Mishnayot of the Perek now, and it's a long Perek, but it's going to take us till the top of Bet Amud Bet, okay? It's a very long Mishnah. Okay, I organized it by chart. Okay, there were different ways you could have done this chart, but because there's Machlokot, it was a little hard. I was thinking maybe we should just have, but what I did is I separated it into three. One is, there's three, before we even read the Mishnah, okay, we'll talk about background, there's three sets of courts. There's courts of three judges, which we've seen all over. The Beit Din is three. We'll talk about the difference between taking any three people and making them into a Beit Din. Are there certain things where you can't just be any three people, it has to be mumchim? We'll already get into that today a little bit. Then there are the bigger courts, which are 23. And then there's the court that sits in Lishkat HaGazit of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's 71. We'll see there's a machlok at whether it's 70 or 71, going back to what I mentioned about this kinim. So now as typical with the mission doesn't start and tell you, okay, there's three types of courts. They just immediately assume that you know that as a fact. And now they're going to tell you which things get judged in which court. Okay, where do you go for three? Where do you go for 23? How do we decide? And obviously, like I said, there's going to be some machlokot about it. And then we're going to learn that not only is there 23 and 71, but there's a few things that you need a different number for. Okay? Dine mamonot b'shlosha. Okay? Basic dine mamonot we do b'shlosha. There's a debate, we'll already get to it right away in the Gemara, about is this a title for the Mishnah? Okay, or is it already talking about a particular case? The assumption we're going to see is that this is just a title. That you do Dine Mamonot, and then what's Dine Mamonot? And here we're going to get a perut. Gzelot v'chavalot b'shlosha, if somebody steals, or if somebody hits somebody else, injures someone. Nezek v'chatzi nezek, that goes back to our shor and the boar and all that, right? Whether you pay full nezek or whether you pay chatzi nezek, for example, for a shor tam, if a shor hadn't, you know, damages somebody's possessions, and he hadn't been forewarned, he hadn't done it yet three times, he only pays half damages. Tashlume kefel v'tashlume arba ava chamisha. By the way, I'll try to describe the cases, but the Gemara is going to go off for pages and pages upon all these cases, so I don't want to get into too much detail now. Tashlumei kefel v'tashlumei arba ava chamisha is if you steal, you have to pay. If you steal from someone, you have to pay kefel. If you have to return the item and double. And if you steal an animal, depending on which type of animal, you have to pay either four times or five times. So that's also b'shlosha. Ha'ones, so now we're moving away from Dine Mamonot, we're getting into other stuff. Ha'ones v'hamifateh v'amotzi shemra. Okay, somebody rapes a woman, bitula, okay, an unmarried woman. Remember, according to our law, he has to pay 50 kesef to the father, and he has to marry her, which, you know, to us sounds crazy, but in those days it was a way of protecting the woman. V'amifateh, he seduces a woman to sleep with him, also the same thing. He has to pay the 50 shekel, which is, again, the 200 zuz. It's the same amount as the ketubah. V'hamotzi shemra b'shlosha. Okay, there's a bit of a machloket about what the case of Motzi Shem Rabbi Shlosha is. Motzi Shem is a man who claims that his wife was a bitula when they got engaged, but when they got married, she was no longer a bitula. So he basically claims that he brings witnesses that said she slept with someone in between the time they were engaged to the time they got married. Remember, then in those days, now we do it under the chuppah, all of it. The erusin and the nisuin, our engagement doesn't have halachic status. But in those days, it was with usually about a year apart. There's a machloket about whether the case here is that he brought false witnesses and we judge the case regarding the false witnesses in front of three, or whether we're talking about the case where he goes to court and says, I don't want to pay. What happens in that case, by the way? So he doesn't owe her any of the ketubah money. He can he divorces her, and he doesn't have to pay her the ketubah money, so he goes to court to say, I don't owe her the ketubah money because she broke the agreement, right? She had slept with someone while she was engaged. So there's a machloket about which case we're actually talking about. It's actually, maybe I shouldn't say machloket. Rashi here says that we're talking about the Edei Sheker, if he brings false witnesses. And Rashi later on, when it discusses this in depth on Daf Chet, he says it also includes a case where he just comes to the court to say, I don't want to pay my ketubah money. Also, that has to be judged in front of three. But Chachamim Omrim, so that's Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chachamim omrim, motzi shemra be'esrim v'shlosha, mipnei sheyesh bo dinei nefashot. In motzi shemra case, if she's really guilty, so she was a nara mu'orasa who slept with somebody else, she gets the death penalty. So therefore, it would have to be judged with death penalty, which we don't know yet, but we're going to see, and we already can figure it out now, is going to, anything with the death penalty is going to have to be judged in a court of 23. So Chachamim say there's an aspect of this that could lead to a dinei nefashot, and therefore, the whole case should always be brought in front of 23. Makot b'shlosha, again, we're going to see why they have a machloket later on, okay? Whether when any time you get malkot, or do we do it in front of 3 or 23. Ibor chodesh b'shlosha, if you decide to turn the month into a 30-day month, right? There's always a debate every month whether, right, until they set the calendar in the 4th century, there was always a debate about how are we kovea the kiddush chodesh. They would go and bring witnesses and all that, so they would determine the new month, what day the new month is, in front of shlosha. But Ibor Shana, we're going to see there's a machloket. Ibor Shana is when they sat in Adar and they said, do we need another Adar? Are we up to Aviv yet? There were all sorts of criteria, but the main one being Chag HaPesach had to be in the Aviv, and if they thought it wasn't yet Aviv, they would determine when to be Ma'aber Shana. Also, that became set at a certain point. We have a 19-year cycle now, which particular years within the cycle, every 2 or 3 years, has an extra month. So Ibor Shana b'shlosha divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer b'shlosha matchilin, they start to talk about it, discuss it with three. U'b'chamisha nosim v'notnin, then they bring in another two to do the, to really debate the issue. V'gomrim, in other words, if b'shlosha, they already think we need to consider this, then they'll bring it to five. They'll do a diyun, and then gomrim b'shiva. In order to determine they're adding another month, they view it as much more serious, so they add on seven. Again, we'll see in the Gemara where they get to these numbers. V'im, but Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, but im gamru b'shlosha mu'uberet. But if for whatever reason they only did it with three, it's okay. Ideally, three, then five, then seven. Smichat zikenim, there's an interesting machloket about this. The general is that we're talking about if the judges, the Sanhedrin, makes a mistake, we're going to see these laws later, and they teach the wrong halacha, so they have to bring a par ha'elem davar shel tzibur, okay? There's a particular par they bring to say we're responsible for the fact. It's only relating to something the Sanhedrin teaches. Bishogeg, they teach by mistake the wrong law, and it's a law that people, if they do it wrong, they get karet for. So if that's the case, the Sanhedrin has to bring a special korban, and the zkenim do smicha on the animal. So they assume that smichat zkenim means that. But the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnah says, no, we're talking about smicha of rabbis. Okay, the smicha that they used to do, which we already discussed a number of times, they didn't do in Bavel, right? It was something that they said only in Eretz Yisrael can you do the actual smicha. It's not the same as smicha nowadays. Just like we all know, there's different smichas, and some people rely on some smichas and not on others. But the smicha that they did in Babel, people were called rabbis, but they weren't called rabbis the way they were in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why all the Eretz Yisrael rabbis were called Rebbe, okay, like Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. They were all Amoraim with the title Rebbe because they lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar, we've seen, and a whole bunch, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, as opposed to the Amoraim in Babel, Rav. Right, some of them don't even have Rav, right? Rav Abaye, all those names, but most of them have names, Rav Nachman, Rav Yehuda, all those people, but they're not called Rebbe. So the Rambam says we're talking about that kind of smicha. Va'arifat egla, now this is interesting, this doesn't mean being oref the egla. What does it mean? When there was a dead body in between two cities right out in the middle of nowhere, they would measure which is the closest city, and therefore which city is responsible to do the egla rufa, where they say, Yadenu lo shafcha dam, say, we're not responsible. So, who does the measuring? So, the measuring has to be done in a Beit Din Shal Shlosha. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha. He says these things need chamisha and not three. Okay. Hachalitza v'hamiyunin b'shlosha. When you do the chalitza ceremony, you do that in front of three, right? When a man marries a woman, he dies without children. She has to do a ceremony if the brother doesn't want to marry her, or in a time when they stop doing Yibam altogether, then she does a ceremony of Chalitza. V'hamiyunim, that was a young girl who gets married off, right? How many times have we gone through this? A young girl gets married off. Her father's not alive anymore. If her father would have married her, it would have been a Nisuin Doraita. Since the mother or the brother marries her off when she's a Ketana, she has the opportunity when she gets of age, if there's a small window of opportunity, that she can say, I don't want to be married to this man, and she's done. She doesn't need to get anything else, but it has to be done in front of Shlosha. Now, notice what's missing here, the obvious, if we're in this category, get. It doesn't say get. So there's a machloket, whether get, it's just obvious. If you do these in front of Shlosha, you obviously need to do get, or whether get doesn't need judges at all. Maybe get doesn't even need judges, right? The man gives the woman the get, and what do you need judges for? Okay, right, you need aidim, but not judges. So there's a machloket about it, whether you need judges or not. Right, nowadays they always do it in a court, but you know it's not so clear that you have to do it in a court. Neta revayu master sheni she'ein damav yiduin. Okay, well the assumption is, what does it mean? They're okay. First of all, neta revayu, the fourth year, you're supposed to bring your parents to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to eat them there. Master sheni, also you have to bring them to Yerushalayim and eat it there. But they would always do pidyon unless you live close and you were willing to schlep your stuff. So you would redeem it on a coin. But if you didn't know the value, and the assumption is they rotted in the interim, and you therefore couldn't even assess their value, so you had to assess their value in front of a court. That also b'shlosha. Ha-hekdesho b'shlosha. Again, we'll see exactly what the case is, but it sounds like somebody's makdish something, and then we have to determine its value. Ha-erchin ha-mitaltaling b'shlosha. Okay, this sounds strange, because erchin is something we know. According to the Torah, erchin is when somebody gives the value of a person. So how do we have erchin ha-mitaltaling? What does that mean? So the Gemara is going to get into that. B'shlosha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Mehem Kohen. When you do these erchim, one of them has to be a Kohen, because it talks about a Kohen in the Pasuk. Again, we'll get into all the details later. Hakarka o tish av Kohen. If you're doing erchim instead of on metaltalim, you're doing erchim on karka od. Again, we don't know exactly what this case is. We'll see. You're doing it on land, then you need 9 in a Kohen, okay, which means 10 altogether. Vadam kayotze bahen. And erchim for Adam is the same as the karka. Dine nefashot, okay, second category now. Dine nefashot, laws regarding to, right, when death penalty. Be'estrim v'shlosha, right, you can imagine why that would be. Obviously, we want to take much more seriously. Harovea v'hanirba be'estrim v'shlosha, okay, someone who gets seduced by has sexual relations with an animal, both the rovea is the man who has sex with an animal, and a nirba is the woman who the animal has sex with her. That's judged Besrim v'shlosha, Shenemar. How do we know that this is Besrim v'shlosha? Now what happens? Both that person gets killed and the animal gets killed. So even the animal, okay, now we're particularly talking actually the roveh and the nirbah is the animal. The animal who is roveh, who had sex with a woman, and the nirbah is an animal that a man had sex with. Those cases are 23. How do you know the animal has to be judged by 23? Shneimar about the woman, it says v'haragta ta'isha ve'eta be'ema. And in the man's case, it says that the man is killed and ve'eta be'ema ta'arogu. So they make a hakesh, just like, right, since both the animal and the human gets killed, so therefore we're going to judge it also in the same type of court. Shur ha'niskal ve'esrim v'shlosha, and a shur that gets stoned. Why does a shur get stoned? If a shur kills a person, he gets stoned, the shur. Shneimar ha'shur yisakel v'gam ba'alav yumat. If you remember, what do we explain here? Really, the ba'alim don't get killed, right? It says, im kofer yushat alav, and he gives his, like, a ransom payment for his life, so the ba'alim don't actually really get killed. But since the pasuk seems to indicate that the ba'alim, since they caused the death of someone inadvertently, they should really get killed for it. Therefore, kimitat ba'alim kach mitat ashur. Okay, therefore, the shur also has to be judged by esrim v'shlosha. So even though it's interesting, in this case, the person doesn't actually get killed, but since the pasuk seems to indicate that he should get killed, therefore, we're going to say that the shur also needs esrim v'shlosha. Okay, the wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard, the bardalas is unclear, but let's call him a cheetah for all intents and purposes. The nachash is a snake. Okay, all of them, mitatam b'esrim v'shlosha, the assumption is if they killed somebody. Rabbi Eliezer omer, kol hakodem lahargan zacha, meaning you don't actually have to bring him to court, but if you kill him, even better. There's a machloket we'll see later about whether he means you should kill him no matter what. If you see an animal, go kill them before they kill some other person. Or whether they only mean if they killed somebody. Then you should just go kill them right away, right? You can imagine what they're worried about. If you wait till you go to court, we know how long court proceedings could take. And, you know, there might more damage might happen. Rabbi Akiva omer mitatam be'esrim v'shlosha. Rabbi Akiva says, no, their death is be'esrim v'shlosha. Now, this is quite strange because it sounds exactly like Tanakama. So we'll get to that also in the Gemara. What's the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Tanakama? Because Tanakama said be'esrim v'shlosha. He said, kol ha'kodem lahargan zachan. And he said, mitatam be'esrim v'shlosha. So it seems to be saying the same thing as the earlier Shita. It's hard to read this entire mission and know that you're not going to get to the Gemara for a long, long time. Okay. Leaving you with a lot of questions. Ein danim, okay, now we're getting to the courts of 71. Ein danim lo et hashevet, v'lo et hanavi sheker, v'lo et hakohen gadol, ela al pi beidin shel 71. Before we even explain these things, I want to show you that the structure here is totally different. Instead of saying, this is in the court of this, it says, you don't do this only in a court of 71. Okay, which is, I think it's just the way they view the 71. They wanted people to understand, and maybe because there was only one court of 71 and there was a concern that people wouldn't uphold this law, and therefore they put it in the Lashon of, you absolutely cannot do these things unless you go to that one court that's sitting in Lishkat HaGazit. Okay, I think that was their motivation by saying it this way. Okay, so let's go through the cases. What does it mean, Danim et HaShevet? That means if an entire Shevet goes and does something wrong, you have to judge the whole Shevet, you know, since they're all together, it's a huge group of people in a court of 71. Nevi Sheker, somebody who lies in the name of God, right? He says he's bringing a nevuah of God, and he's not. Below it's a Kohen Gadol. If a Kohen Gadol sins, also you do it only Beit Din Shel 71. Ve'eim motziin l'mechemet ha'reshut el al pi Beit Din Shel 71. We said this before. The king can't go out to war to have a mechemet reshut. Not a mechemet mitzvah l'chboshet ha'aretz, but anything that comes into the category of a voluntary war has to be in a court of 71. Ve'eim mosifin al ha'ir va'al ha'azarot. This has to do with all the laws of things that can only be eaten in Yerushalayim, or things that can only be eaten in the Azarav, the Ben HaMikdash. So, right, kochim and kochim kali, which can be eaten where. And if you want to expand the boundaries and determine this is also part of the Azarav, let's say they do a shiputz and they expand, right? So, where they want to expand the borders of Yerushalayim. So, in order to determine where we're expanding the borders to, that has to be done. Alpi Beit Din Shel 71. Ve'ein osim sanhedriot l'shvatim, ela alpi Beit Din Shel 71. This means that you can't create a new court of 23 unless the 71, right, the court of 71, they're the ones who determine where we're going to put a court of 23. Ve'ein osim ir hanidachat, ela alpi Beit Din Shel 71. If you want to judge the city is a city where all the inhabitants went to worship Avodah Zarah, what happens in that case? All the people get saif, they die by sword, and the city and all of its possessions get burned. Ein osim ir hanidachat besvar, v'lo shalosh, aval osin achat u'shtayim. You can't determine that an Ir HaNidachat is going to be an Ir HaNidachat if they're on the border of a non-Jewish town. And we'll get into the details later. And you can't make three adjacent cities into an Ir HaNidachat, but you can do one or two. Sanhedrin Gedola. Okay, so now we're going to talk about, that was all what gets ruled in which courts. Now we're going to get into the numbers. Where do these numbers come from? Okay? So, Sanhedrin Gedola Tashal 71, Uktana Shel 23. You might have thought they would have started here, right? Often we have it, where the Mishnah starts in a place that you would think it would have been smarter to start here. So, Sanhedrin Gedola Tashal 71, and Uktana was Shel 23. Minayin L'Gedola Shel 71. What's our source? Okay, for this one on the bottom chart on the sheet. What's the source for 71? Shenemar Esfali 70 Ish Misiknei Yisrael, right? In Sefer Bamidbar, we read this a few weeks ago. Moshe is told to gather 70 Zkenim. Moshe al gabehen, there you get 71. You have Moshe and his 71. Perfect, we get to 71. Rabbi Yehuda omer shivim. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and he says, no, no, no. It's just the Zkenim that are the Sanhedrin. Moshe was on top of the whole thing, but he wasn't counted in the count. And they actually, Rabbi Yehuda thinks it should be 70. Uminayin l'ktana shehishal 23. Shenemar, okay, here's a pasuk in Bamidbar lamid hey. Vishavtu ha'ida, okay, you can, if you have the Torah or on the side, you can see the whole pasuk. This is in the Ir Miklat sugya, in the Ir Miklat section. B'shavtu ha'ida ben hamakeh ben goel hadam ala mishpatim ha'elu. That's the first pasuk. Okay, pasuk lamedalet. So the Eida judges, and then it says, v'hitzilu ha'ida ha'rotzeach miya goel hadam. And the Eida saves the rotzeach from the goel hadam. This is in a case of inadvertent killing. So first they judge to determine, is he a makeh b'shogeg? And once they do, then they save him. So now there's an assumption here. B'shavtu eida b'hitzilu et ha'eida. So we have eida shofetet and eida matzelet. Now what's an eida? We're going to get to it in a minute. Where they prove that eida is 10, but the assumption right now is eida is 10 people. So we have 10 that are shoftim and 10 that are matzilim. The assumption is, right, they're not the same 10. Hare kan esrim. So before we move on and get to our 23, we have to explain, how do we know the Eida is Asara? Shenemar and the Meraglim, Ad Matai Le'Eida Hara'ah Hazot. About the Meraglim. And who's the Eida Hara'ah? There were 12 spies. Yatsu, Yoshua, Ve'Kalev. Right? They were good. The Eida Hara'ah is just the 10. So therefore, we have Eida is 10. Right? This is also source for Minyan. Right? Uminayin lahavi ochlosha. Okay, so that got us up to 20. We have an Eidam Shofetet, Eidam Atzelet. Each one is 10. Now, what about the other three? So now they look at this pasuk. Okay, in Shmo Kafkimo pasuk bet. Listen to the whole pasuk first. Lo tihiye acharei rabim liraot, velo tanel rav lintot, acharei rabim lahatot. Okay, so it says here, don't go after Rabim Liraot, and then it says Achare Rabim Lehatot. So what do they say here? Mimash Mashinamar Loti Achare Rabim Liraot, Shomeani Sheye Mahem Litova. Right? It seems like you can't go after Rabim Liraot, so it must be obviously Litova, you can go Achare Rabim. So in Kain Lama Neamar Achare Rabim Lahatot. So why does it say then Achare Rabim Lahatot at the end of the pasuk? It seems unnecessary. So what do they answer? Lo ka tayatcha l'tova, tayatcha l'ra'a. They learn from here that there's one thing you do for ra'a and one thing you do for tova, and in order to convict someone, it's different than in order to exonerate someone. Ha tayatcha l'tova al pi echad. You can have a majority of one when it comes to saying someone's going to be go free. But ha tayatcha l'ra'a al pi shnayim. It's like, I'll make a silly, right, lahavdil, but like you have to win a game of ping pong, right? With two, it's not enough to just win by one, right? There's this concept. Just one is not very strong. It's not really a win. So therefore, when it comes to lira'ah, right, we're always, the rule of thumb here is always, we want, and Steinsaltz actually says this, because we're trying to play God here, and we don't know really who we are to play God, and therefore, they're going to be very extra, extra, extra careful not to accuse anybody, not to convict anybody, unless they're sure. So therefore, when it comes to convicting, we're going to be much more machmir about it. And what's the problem now? So if you add it, so now what do they say? So you're going to need two more in order to get lira'ah. And once you add the two more, obviously you could have included them in the other, but you want to have, once you have the 20, we're going to add from acharei rabim lira'ot and acharei loti acharei rabim lira'ot and then acharei rabim lato, we're going to add another two. But then in beit din shakul, but you don't want to have a beit din that's an even number. So mosifin aleim od echad, harei kan 23. And that's how they got to 23. A little complicated, but they get there. Bekama yehe ba'ir v'tehe ruya l'sanhedrin. Notice they don't explain about the three. It's just pretty obvious that you need three, right? If you want to have a majority, you're going to have three. Bekama yehe ba'ir v'tehe ruya l'sanhedrin. And the assumption here, they're talking about a 23. How many people you need in a city to say, okay, now we need to have a Sanhedrin of 23. Me'a v'esrim. Okay, 120. Rabbi Nechemya omer, 230 keneged sarei asarot. Okay, this is the second reference we've seen to Moshe setting up a court system in the Midbar, right? The first was in Bamidbar when he has the Shivim Zkenim, and the second now they're referencing Yitro when he sets up the Sarei Asarot. What are Sarei Asarot? One for every 10. So if you're going to have a court of 23, one for every 10, you're going to have 230. Okay, that's the Mishnah. Again, like I said, it's going to be a while till we get through all the details of that Mishnah in the Gemara, but we will get there. Okay, the Gemara starts off with the first one, okay? Atu gzelot v'chavalot lav dinei mamonot ninhu. In other words, what does it do? It says dinei mamonot, and then it goes to gzelot v'chavalot. Aren't those dinei mamonot? Right? So shouldn't that be included when we said dinei mamonot? It should include the gzelot v'chavalot. So Amar Rabbi Avau, mahen katane. It's a mahen structure. What's a mahen structure? There's a title, and then it goes into what are those things. So dinei mamonot, as I said from the beginning, is just a title. And then it goes into the details of what these things are. Ma'hein dinei mamonot, gzelot v'chavalot. Now, what is blatantly missing? Since we've learned Baba Metzi and Baba Batra, we should have realized this. Aval hoda'ot v'halva'ot lo. But notice what's missing. Hoda'ot, when you admit that someone says you owe me money, and I say, yes, I owe you part, but not the whole thing. And halva'ot, or when someone lends you money, you say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't owe you money. Or I paid you back, etc. So now, this is going to be strange. What do you mean? Hoda'ot and Hava'ot aren't there, then where are they? Right? But they're basically telling you, it says dinei mamonot, and then it tells you what they are to exclude Hoda'ot and Hava'ot. Utsricha. And why do they need to exclude them? De'itana dinei mamonot, if you would have said just dinei, and why do you have to say it in this way? If you had just said, I made a little chart of this on the other page, on the second side. If you had just said dinei mamonot, Hava amina da'afilu hoda'ot v'halva'ot. Right? If you just had the title dinei mamonot, we would have assumed hoda'ot and hava'ot are included. And therefore, tana gzelot v'chavalot. And that's why it said, we mean only gzelot v'chavalot. So now they're going to say, well, what if you just said gzelot v'chavalot? Then it would have been obvious you were excluding hoda'ot and hava'ot. So itana gzelot v'chavalot v'lo katani dinei mamonot, and you just didn't say dinei mamonot at all. In other words, they're saying, why did you need the title? You could have just said gzelot v'chavalot, tashlum kefel, right, and all the others. Hava amina hu adin da'afilu hoda'ot v'halva'ot. You would have thought that it meant also hoda'ot and halva'ot. Why? Right? Why would you have thought that? V'hai dekatan gzelot v'chavalot mishum de'ikar gimel dektive b'gzelot v'chavalot ktive. You might have thought that the reason the Mishnah chose the words gzelot v'chavalot and didn't choose to say hoda'ot v'halva'ot, even though hoda'ot and halva'ot are included, remember, we're still talking about what you would have thought, if you hadn't had the words dinei mamonot, you would have thought it mentioned gzelot v'chavalot because that's where the ikar din of three is mentioned. Remember, the Mishnah didn't tell us where we get three from, right? I said it was more obvious. But now the Mishnah is going to say that the ikar din of three comes from gzelot v'chavalot, and therefore you would have assumed the Mishnah took the example of gzelot v'chavalot, because that's the classic case it's talking about in the Torah. But from there, it would be obvious hoda'ot and halva'ot. And therefore, by saying dinei mamonot, and then saying hoda'ot and halva'ot, it's telling you that only hoda'ot and halva'ot, and not other dinei mamonot. It's trying to say dinei mamonot, and these are the dinei mamonot that are included, and that's hoda'ot, and that's zeilot v'chavalot. And we haven't yet figured out, then what do we do with them? But hold off on that. We're going to get there. So now that they mention the ikar gimel ktive b'zeilot v'chavalot, we're going to see where it says it. Dichtiv. Gzelot, okay, so where is it written? Gzelot, dichtiv. So right now they told us it's written by gzelot and chavalot. So gzelot, dichtiv, and I brought you the pasuk here, okay? It's from Shmuel Perek Kaf Bet. We could just look inside here on the sheet. Okay, ki teni shavayeu kesef okelim l'shmur v'gunav mi beit ha'ish, im yimatzei ha'ganav v'shalem shnayim, im lo yimatzei ha'ganav v'nikrav ba'al habayit el Elohim, im lo shalach yado b'melech ha'reyeu, al kol davar pesh al shor al chamor al se al salma al kol avida asher yomar ki uze ad Elohim yavod var shnehem asher yishiyun Elohim yishalem shnayim l'reim. So notice, this is gzelot. And what does it say? The word Elohim appears three times. We said Elohim is judge. So what do you see here? Three judges. Okay, that's Gzeilot. So Dichtiv, so the Gemara says very simply, that's why I brought you the Psukim, Dichtiv Nikra Balabayit El Elohim. It only brings one case, but it means, and keep reading on. Okay? We're going to see that it appears three times. Chavalot, what about Chavalot? So they say, this is more like an obvious jump. Mali Chaval B'Gufo, Mali Chaval B'Mamono. They say a Chabala is what? You hit someone's body, and stealing is attacking somebody's property. So just like attacking someone's property is by three, also attacking someone's body is by three. They basically think that these two are in the same category. Okay, so now they say, Tana, Mahen Dine Mamonot, Gzeilot v'chavalot, Aval Hoda'ot v'halva'ot lo. So now they want to explain this, right? When it says Mahen Dine Mamonot, we mean Gzeilot v'chavalot, but not Hoda'ot v'halva'ot, so what do we mean? Ulamai, for what? If you want to say you don't need three judges, meaning you even need less than three judges for hodaot and halvaot, right? Now, by the way, this sounds strange, but we've seen, particularly we saw it in Gittin, and we've seen it in other places, that sometimes two could be considered a beit din. Okay, it does come up. But hama rabbi avahu, shnayim shedanu dinei mamonot ledivrei hakol ein dinei din. He says it explicitly, that if two people judge a dinei mamonot case, it doesn't count. That would obviously include hodaot and havot. So you can't say it's less than three. And obviously it's not going to be 23. That would be ridiculous. Ela, what does it mean to say? Delo be'inam mumchim. You don't need, you can just take any random three people. They don't need to be judges. And this is going to be something that we're going to see throughout, that when they say judges, judges sometimes means any three men that you get together. Okay, women can't be judges, just like they can't be witnesses. That's going to be one of the very difficult sugyot in this masechet, why women couldn't be witnesses. I don't have a good answer for you, and I won't have a good answer for you. One of those sugyot that always, it's very difficult. But assuming three men, can it be any three men? Like we do Hatarat Nedarim, right? On Erev Rosh Hashanah, we get up in front of any three men. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't have to be judges. And when we say dayan, do we mean dayanim mumchim? Okay, ones that are trained judges. In those days, it was really the Talmidei Chachamim that were the judges, the rabbis for the most part. Most of them judge cases. So that's what it's telling you, that when it comes to Hodeo Balvo, you need three, but they don't need to be mumchim. So now they say, my kasavar, what were they thinking? Now you have to understand the context of the psukim here. Okay, the psukim that we quoted now with the the psukim we just read for Shmo Kafbet, right? Psukim Zayin and Chet, Vav Zayin Chet. Further on in the Perek, okay, you don't even have to look inside, but if you have the Torah or, it tells you that in Kesef Talvet Ami Et Ani Imach, Lo Tiyah Lo Kenoshe Lo Tisimun Alav Neshech. That's in Shmo Kafbet, Perek Kafdalid, which means that it's in the same Perek. Once things are in the same Perek, we could start to kind of view them together. So there's something called Eruv Parshio. So either they're going to say, we view Eruv Parshiot, that we connect these Parshiot, or we say, we don't have Eruv Parshiot, we view them as two separate things. So my kasavar, what did they think? E kasavar Eruv Parshiot k'tiv kan, if you view this perek as we combine both the halvaot and hoda'ot with the cases of damages, of geneva, gzela, then Libai Nami Mumchim. If you view these as all Eruv Parshiot, then what would you say? Well, what applies to the Gzeilot, which then we apply to Chabalot, also would apply to Halvaot. And we just said we don't do that. And Ika Savar Ein Kan Eruv Parshiot, Ein Eruv Parshiot Katuv Kan, then Shlosha Lamali. And if the whole root of the law of three judges comes from here, and we say it's just here, and we don't view this as Eruv Parshiot, that we can learn from one to the other, then we shouldn't assume that you need three judges for Hoda'ot and Halva'ot. So therefore, it doesn't work with either option. So what are the answer? La'olam kasavar Eruv Parshiot katuv kan. We do view this as one whole thing. Okay, this is going to be just like the end of Bava Batra. Okay? This is, we've often talked about how the beginning of Masechtot matches the end of the previous Masechet. So what do they say? Bidin hu delibai nami mumchin. You can maybe see where this is going already, because remember, we're talking about hoda'ot and halva'ot. So from Torah law, really, we view this as a Eruv Parshiot. And really, what's the Torah telling you? You need three, and you need mumchin, because, again, it's all in the same parak. So therefore, if Zeilot need three, also halva'ot need three. But hay delo biina mumchin mishum de Rabbi Chanina de Amar Rabbi Chanina dvar Torah chad yinei mamano vechad yinei nefashot bedrisha vechakira shneemar mishpat chad yeh lachem. Okay, when it says mishpat chad yeh lachem, they darshan this. We see this pasuk a bunch of times. They darshan that all dinei nefashot and dinei mamano need serious drisha and chakira. And Steinzel uses this as his proof also for the fact that we view this is a godly, you know, messengers of God. You have to find the absolute truth, and therefore you have to really grill the judge, the witnesses, etc. Which here the Gemara is assuming one can make a jump from there to the fact that the dayanim have to be mumchim. Umatam amru dinei mamano lo bein adrisha v'chakira kedei shelo tinol delet b'fnei lovin. If we insisted that hoda'ot and havaot could only be judged in front of three dayanim mumchim, people would stop loaning money because it's going to be very hard to get their money back. And this goes back to what we ended with, where that became a factor that basically overrode Torah law. So because of this, the significance of taking out, of lending people money, they overrode the Torah need for mumchim.